Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon discuss Chelsea against Tottenham tonight. Whose European ambitions will be extinguished come the end of it? Is Ange Postecoglou right to ignore Tottenham's set-piece weakness? And which club has had a more successful season? We look into the failed drug test of Ryan Garcia, from genius to cheat in a week, plus another physical assault on a grassroots pitch. We speak to the chief exec of Ref Support UK, Martin Cassidy, on what more can be done. This is Outspoken with White and Jordan. It was with great interest I read your column this morning, Mr. Jordan, in the Mail. Spurs are good at the eye candy stuff,
yeah,
but to get to the next level, it's time to copy Arsenal. I was intrigued by it, and I like what you said. Expectations were low, and Postecoglou raised the bar. Whatever happens in the final five games, starting at Stamford Bridge tonight, he has exceeded expectations. He has.
I think so. I think that's he came in at the ideal time to some extent. Some would say, "Oh, how's it the ideal time when you lose Harry Kane?" I made the analysis at the beginning of the season. There were radiators and there were drains, and irrespective of how brilliant Harry Kane was as a player, there was this constant innuendo and insinuation that he was going to leave Spurs for a bigger football club, and that diminishes the club and the players alongside him. And also, when someone steps away, a vacuum comes in and someone steps into it. And in stepped Son and other players that stepped up for the first 10 games of the season. You also had, you know, Conte and his particular brand of cheer, telling everyone what you thought of them in leaving Tottenham Hotspur. You had an anti-Levy campaign going, because I went to games last year and saw the hatred and vitriol that certain sections of the fan base had towards Daniel. And you had a general feeling of people not being very happy. And then you saw Spurs, the change of play, the change of style, the relationship they developed with Ange Postecoglou, because the expectations were low. And with football, one thing you do, in order to get people to be invested, you need to raise expectations. And once you raise expectations, if you don't deliver against those expectations, then you have a problem. Now, he's raised expectations because the football is good,
yeah,
aesthetically appealing.
Yeah.
But Tottenham do need, in my view, to kick on, and he needs better players. Whether the speedboat of that brain Timo Werner gets replaced, whether Kulusevski is a good enough player, whether Pedro Porro is a good enough player.
Madison needs to get more consistent.
I think Madison needs to get more consistent. They,
yeah,
need to buy players that know what winning things looks like, not good players that can give you an aesthetically appealing look. So that was my sort of analysis in this week's article.
I enjoyed it. I mean, Tottenham face Chelsea tonight, but a defeat would all but end their hopes of qualifying for the Champions League.
Mm.
That likewise, if Chelsea lose, their slim hopes of a Europa League, Europa Conference League could be done as well. So they go into this from an unusual standpoint, both of them. And then this morning, with interest, of course, I enjoyed your column in the Mail. The back of the Times this morning, corners, I don't care, says Ange. Ange Postecoglou has said that he's not interested in Tottenham Hotspur's dreadful record at set pieces this season and insists solving the problem isn't a priority for him. In fact, Simon, tune in. This was Ange.
To quote Billy Joel, you may be right, I may be crazy, but it's maybe a lunatic you're looking for, mate, because I'm just not interested in it. I never have. And And I think enough of you have done enough research on me to know that this is not the first time I've been questioned about set pieces in my coaching career. There is an underlying reason for that, which I'm very, very comfortable with. Eventually, I will create a team that has success, and it won't be because of working on set pieces.
That's the part I'll take.
What do you take of that?
Well, I think it's a strange observation. I don't know what the underlying reason is why he doesn't focus on that. But I do like the final part. The final part is the takeaway, isn't it?
Yes.
I will build a team that has success, and it will not be because we defend well against free kicks. He's not a silly man. He's not a silly... He's obviously becoming... He wants to die on this hill because it's probably irked him that people are criticising him about their inability to defend against set pieces, and it was set pieces that predominantly determines the North London derby.
It's an important hill though.
Well, I would think so. I don't know why he wants to fight on that hill and die on that hill potentially, and I don't know what his underlying reasons are, because he says that people know my underlying reasons. But the bigger takeaway for me is, how does he perceive that the undoubted success that he's going to have doesn't involve the sum of all marginal gains and defending set pieces and being disciplined and strong in those areas? I think he's talking about the culture of how you get to a position where you don't have to defend set pieces because you don't give them away. You don't have to defend set pieces because you're so strong in offence that people are defending against you rather than you against them. I think that's the underlying assertion.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He's basically pushing, I think, sections of the media. I think he's saying, you know, look, I'm a football manager, you're a journalist, I don't tell you how to write a newspaper column, don't tell me how to produce a winning team.
I get that, but if he's sitting in front of you, Simon, and you're the football club owner,
yeah,
and he says, you know what, I'm not really that interested in Tottenham's dreadful record at set pieces this season. In fact, solving the problem isn't a priority for me, Mr. Owner.
Well,
I can imagine your reaction to that.
But there would be nuance and there would be context.
Yeah.
My favourite words. And I would be saying to him, okay, what is it that you mean? Because ultimately we potentially lost a North London derby because we were not robust enough in defending set pieces. And then Ange Postecoglou would explain to me unequivocally why he thinks there are other things higher up on the food, on the pecking order, of what he needs to fix first. I really believe... And it's not because I'm some sort of psychoanalyst, that he is trying to instill a culture in Tottenham Hotspur that has deviated from the Spursy mentality of being good to look at, a football club that's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but always quite glamorous, to a football club that's got real steel and fire and a single-eyed sort of narrowing of the eyes, determination and how to win games like the top sides have.
Mm.
And I think that's where he thinks his focus should be. That's why people, when he talks about the comment that he made after the Chelsea game, if we went down to five people, I would defend. He doesn't mean that. What he means really is that I'm building a culture in these players that we are in the business of winning, and we're not in the business of for changing, like the old expression, the Iron Lady's not for turning.
Yeah.
He's not for changing.
Sure.
He believes in it, and neither was Pep Guardiola. When he came over here, Pep Guardiola, in the first season, everyone said he cannot do what he's attempting to do. And in the first season, he struggled.
Mm.
Yeah, he did it though, didn't he?
Yeah, true.
And he didn't pivot,
true.
And he didn't change.
Yeah.
So my point is, in that article, is in order for him to have this balls-out approach, he's going to need better players.
Yeah, no, I couldn't disagree with you on that. Incidentally, nuance, is that a fancy word for context? I think it is, isn't it?
No, it's caveats, isn't it? It's about looking at all the different angles, that the sum of all its parts.
As we go into the 10:30 break, Simon, I'll ask you this. Chelsea, Tottenham, they play tonight. Who's had the more successful season of the two?
Well, I think you'd have to probably say Spurs.
Would you?
Because, well, no one expected Chelsea to stink the place out repeatedly. No one expected the challenges of, whilst they've been to cup finals, and I don't think it's the unprecedented failure that we'd all like to say it is, but you didn't expect a club to spend this kind of money to recruit a manager of this so-called pedigree, to find yourself languishing mid-table for most of the season and having some degree of success in knockout competitions.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
The big question is, how has boxing seemingly walked into another doping farce? Ryan Garcia, winner just days ago against Devin Haney, seems to have gone from genius to cheat in a week. It was reported overnight that Garcia tested positive for the performance-enhancing substance Ostarine the day before and the day of his win over Devin Haney last month. It came via a voluntary anti-doping association letter sent to all parties on Wednesday and obtained by ESPN. We're about to be joined by TalkSport's Fight Night pundit Adam Cattrall, who I know has strong views on this. I'll give you Heaney's reaction in a second, but this is how Ryan Garcia reacted to the news.
I came on here to address this bull claim that I cheated.
Lies.
Yeah. Everybody knows that I don't cheat. What can I say? You know, why didn't they come out with this before, you know, the fight, if they found it before? Why would they let me step into the ring as a cheater and then come out with a victory and then they post this, you know? Again, these are people that are trying to attack me for whatever reason, but no weapon against me shall prosper. I never taken a steroid. I don't even know where to get steroids at the end of the day. I barely, you know, take supplements. They're saying it's coming from the ashwagandha. Big lies. I beat his out of here. Everybody go to Warwick tonight. It's lit.
So that was Ryan Garcia, Simon. As you might expect, Devin Haney leapt on it and says, it's unfortunate Ryan cheated and disrespected both the fans and the sport of boxing by fighting dirty and breaking positive, not once but twice. Ryan owes the fans an apology. You don't play boxing. This puts the fight in a completely different light. Despite the disadvantage, I still fought in my shield. I got back up. People die in this sport. This isn't a joke matter. Simon, I know you'll have strong views on this. Adam Cattrall joins us live this morning. Adam, you're taking this. What was your reaction when you first heard about this and Garcia?
Massive disappointment is the initial reaction, because what Ryan Garcia did a week ago, yes, there's still a cloud over that victory because he failed to make weight. And I suppose we're going to get stuck into all of these intricacies throughout the course of this fight in a moment. He became the face of boxing because of his social media following, because of the magnitude of the victory. He became a bigger star than he already was. And now that this news has come out overnight, it just creates a massive shadow over that victory over Ryan Garcia and over the sport of boxing, especially at a time when we all seem to be going in the right direction and there's a good buzz around the sport at the moment.
Do you know, Adam, I can hear it in your voice. This is your sport. You love this sport. Simon, you're the same. You absolutely love this sport. Indeed. You've followed it for years. Mm. How can this happen again? How can it happen again? A high-profile fighter.
Well, because if it indeed is what it looks like, and if it walks and talks and sounds like a duck, it inevitably ends up being one, doesn't it? That there is material advantages for fighters to get the benefits of PEDs. Now, we're obviously convicting him in the court of public opinion based upon the fact that he's got a sample that's been tested before and after the fight that's come back. B samples will be called for. They'll probably come back with the same results. More often than not, they do. And it brings you into a territory. I mean, I don't want to go off on a tangent. I don't like some of the things that came out of Devin Haney's mouth about, you know, I'm not going to get beat by any white boy, but that's a different discussion. The idea that you've got a situation where a perceived super fight now comes into the territory of going into the chaos of drug cheating and all that goes with it diminishes this support sport. And I suppose they've got to step up. People talk about it. Derek Chisora has talked about it. Don Charles has talked about it. I've talked about it. Adam's talked about it. The consequences of being found to have taken a substance perhaps need to be more far-reaching. And whether it's people having purses taken away or whether it's their licenses have been taken away for a longer period of time, the risk-reward return ratio needs to expand so that the consequences are too great for people to want to take these perceived risks.
Yeah, I mean, people will listen to and respect Simon's taking it, as they do with you, Adam. But it's the people at the top of the sport, they've got to do something about it. Rob, one of the listeners this morning, there are sometimes mitigating circumstances, but do we not need bans? Bans for life. People can die in the boxing ring. So already, Adam, there is an outcry amongst the boxing fraternity that the people at the top have got to start looking serious.
Of course, attitudes have got to change towards failed tests. We're still in the middle of an absolute mess that's going on in our own country with one of our fighters over the last couple of years. Just on this particular case, and I know that people will be listening to this and you see the headline, and I want to give some facts in and around it. And you've kind of touched upon a few of those there, Jim, a moment or two ago. So Ryan Garcia has given samples on April the 19th and April the 20th, urine samples, to voluntary anti-doping. And both of those tests have returned Austrian, as you've just pointed out. Both of those tests are still currently being run for another PED called norandosterone. What is Austrian? is a probably a question that some of your listeners are thinking about. Ostrine is the drug that Amir Khan received a ban for from UK anti-doping in the aftermath of his fight with Kell Brook. Ostrine, what it does in the system, it attaches itself to proteins in the body, which enables you to be able to grow muscle. That's obvious. It's also a fat burner, and it also has cardiovascular benefits. It's been on the WADA ban list since 2008. Now, you've heard from Ryan Garcia and his reaction. You've heard from Devin Haney and their social media reaction. What happens next is that Garcia has about 10 days to ask for his B sample to be tested. Simon's right in what he's just flagged up there. B samples and A samples are from the same sample. It's the same urine. It's just split into two different parts in order to avoid contamination in laboratories. Very rarely. In fact, I can't even remember a time covering this sport where a B sample has come up with a different result to the A sample. It does happen, but that will be the next situation. One thing to just flag here, there's been a problem with Ostrine in fight sports in particular because it does find itself into supplements illegally. What you'll find with supplement companies is that they will put Ostrine in the supplement. So the normal man on the street who's going to the gym and taking a supplement feels a little bit of a boost after his gym sessions. Oh, my muscles are feeling a little bit bigger here. That supplement must be brilliant. It's 9 times out of 10 because Ostrine has been put into that supplement illegally. It's not listed on the supplement's packaging. The UFC had a massive problem with this a few years ago. And what they did, they ended up making their own supplement range and stamping these supplements. Therefore, athletes only use approved supplements. So, there's cases where there's approved supplements for fighters to be able to still use now. So that's one thing just to point out regarding Ostrine. One thing for Ryan Garcia is that this is not a good look for him. And the reason why it's not a good look is that on the day that he is tested here, one of the days anyway, April 19th, that's the day that he weighed in, and he weighed in overweight. He came in 3.2 pounds over the 140-pound limit. Yeah. So on the day that he attempted to make weight or failed to make weight, he gave a sample of which is now returned a fat burner. That is not a good look whatsoever for this young man. What the protocol will be now.
Just out of curiosity, because I was going to suggest that maybe that's the polar opposite. If he's taking a fat-reducing PED, it didn't work very well, did it?
How heavy was it?
Well, that's, yeah.
Would be the thing that I would...
Well, depends which optic you want to look for it. The challenge is...
Of course.
The challenge is, Adam, you know, is about how serious boxing wants to be and how serious... Because you haven't got a standardisation across all the different commissions around the world, you've got this fast and loose mentality. We've got two leading fighters... Two of the leading fighters in the world of boxing, Tyson Fury and Canelo Alvarez, that have both tested and failed drugs tests and had sanctions. And the sport now looks at them through a different prism, rightly so, because of their talents. It's about risk and reward, isn't it? It's also, when you talk about the principles, Jim asked the question, why do they do it? Because they're dishonest and they cheat and they think the outcomes are better on that basis. That's about the summation, isn't it, Adam?
People are looking for an advantage. People are looking to gain an advantage at the highest level of sport. Ego plays a massive role in people's decisions in these moments. But
the deterrent isn't strong enough. I mean, a lot of people...
Absolutely, it's not this strong enough.
People made a lot of noise about vendettas and agendas. And I make the British Boxing Board of Control right. As much as I like Conor Benn as a young man... He has to account and has yet to account. And the noise gets... What people do is you get people into camps, they get entrenched and they get allegiances and tribalism. What the British Boxing Board of Control did was have some balls and some teeth.
Yeah, and I'm looking at him at the messages coming in. If guilty, life ban. If Garcia's found guilty, life ban. Life ban should start being introduced. Adam, many people asking this question. The urine samples were collected prior to the fight, the Haney-Garcia fight, but the results weren't known until later.
Yeah.
What's the sense of that?
Well, there is no sense in it. It is standard protocol, that. So he was tested, obviously, on weighing day, that is what they're saying. And he's the 20th, I'm guessing, is his post-fight. So the one on the 20th is after the fight, I'm assuming. The April the 19th one was on weighing day. And the protocol is that it obviously is taken, it's sent off to a lab, and then the results come back.
But why is that protocol?
It's nonsense.
Is it because there's a commercial fear in the world of boxing that leading up to a fight, someone being tested a week out could fail tests, and all of a sudden all the revenue that can be generated from a fight is killed? Is that one of the underlying reasons? Because it makes no sense. You'd be testing someone a week out to be able to give yourself the opportunity to say, you don't get to step in a ring.
It's financial, is what it is.
That's my point.
If you wanted that test result back on the same day, you could get it back on the same day by paying more money.
I'll finish with this with you. I mean, as I said earlier, it's a sport you love. Simon's followed it for many years now. Is your faith in this sport at an all-time low, Adam?
The top end, yeah. When it comes to the way attitudes towards performance-enhancing drugs in sport has to change. And I'm going right across the board here. I mean, I've spent a lot of time speaking about this over the last couple of years, and even fan attitude towards performance-enhancing drugs. There's a reason why drugs are on banned lists. They make a difference. Give your head a wobble if you genuinely think that they don't make it a difference. You're deluded. But they make a difference because they give these fighters a massive advantage, and you are going in to a fight where you are punching another fella in the face and you can cause serious damage.
But Adam, are you in the same camp as I that does not believe that a fighter does this in isolation? He does it with the support or intelligence.
You can't do it on your own.
Of nutritionists and trainers. So you've got to get them too. If you're going to take a fighter down, you're going to have to take down those that train him as well.
Absolutely. People don't do this on their own. They're not sneaking around. This is... If people are going out there and purposely cheating, they're not doing it on their own. They're doing it with... There's a group of people.
So you have to take the trainers down with them as well. Anyone that trains a fighter that fails a drugs test, as a result of that, gets a ban himself as well.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
The world's most dangerous download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Not for the first time, we have witnessed another physical assault in a grassroots football match. The question is, why are we still seeing this? I was shown this on social media this morning, and I can hardly get my head around it. This happened in Anglesey. A member of a coaching team.
Seen it, yeah.
Have you seen it, Simon? Appeared to punch to the ground a young assistant referee in a league game in Wales, as I say, at the weekend. It's my understanding the lad was either 21 or 22 years of age. The victim, this is. It was 15 minutes into the game, and he volunteered to be the assistant referee. He was a player, but he volunteered. I'll do that. Give me the flag. The next thing, he's lying on the ground as someone has laid him out. Yet another instance of physical assault on a grassroots pitch. When are people going to get the message that we will just not tolerate this? Not for the first time, the chief exec of Ref Support UK, Martin Cassidy, joins us. Martin, good morning, mate. I suppose you'll be shaking your head in your first answer to this question. Why are we here again, Martin?
Oh, it's just, I think why we're here again is that it's been caught on camera. And like we've said, and you've helped us with the body cam pilot, which is going on, which is going to be quiet, to be honest. But again, the interesting piece to this is a sub doing the line, which happens probably in the majority of the games. And the reason they've got to do this is because we're short of referees. And the reason we're short of referees, because incidents like this are happening way too often. So that's where we are with this. And I was pleased to see that the FA Wales chief exec responded publicly, said that it's been addressed and they're looking at it, and it's been reported to the police. And I think what gets missed sometimes is the first incident seems to be the FA, and it shouldn't be. It should be the police if they've got enough evidence to do this. So I was really pleased to see that quick responses from the police and the Welsh FA.
Why do you think we're still seeing incidences like this, Martin? Why does this continue to happen in football? We know tempers run high. People can lose the rag a bit. This was 15 minutes into a grassroots game.
I know. But I think for way too long, before we had the help of people like yourselves to profile this, the desensitization of referee abuse and assault has gone on for years. You know, they get chastised, you know, by people on Match of the Day, right down to what we had with Nottingham Forest. You know, this refs are fair game no matter what. It's just gone on for too long. It's too long. And I think being able to profile it with people like yourselves and other people who pick it up is helping get the message out there that, listen, the time has come to do more than what's been done in the past. And we all need to take hold of the situation.
See, I think that's a fair assessment. I think that the culture and the value of refereeing isn't given. Yes, referees should be accountable for bad decisions in the same way that managers and players and owners should be accountable for bad decisions. But this second-class citizen status that seems to be attached to referees and the fair game nature of the mentality that they can be criticised for everything without any nuance or context, and that they can have people, you know, that hound them, and they can listen to death threats, and that they can be physically assaulted. You know, I realise in the professional game that's not what happens, but the principle of a refereeing profession being diminished the way it is. I make the point earlier on about the moment the referees decided to be more strident about the lack of tolerance, I knew that the football mafia would get together and start to be dissenting and unwind for that particular argument and start to snip away and snide away at the way the referees are operating. And what it does is, when it reached the bottom of the food chain, Martin's right, whoever they punched that official gets his collar felt first.
Yeah.
End of discussion.
Yeah.
And then you get the football fraternity in to make sure that he doesn't get to play football or be around football or to manage football teams anytime soon. But it is about a cultural thing. You know, I do think referees have in the past been officious swines. I've seen some of them. I've sat outside in corridors as an owner of a football club, watched some of the pomposity of refereeing from David Ellery and so forth. But there is also a huge amount of value. Without referees and linesmen, you don't have football. So you've got to put value into it. You've got to make them accountable. But it starts from the value of the top. And every opportunity that is given in the media, on most instances, there is almost a dehumanising of the individual and a fair game opportunity to criticise whatever they do. And I don't like it. I don't think it's right. And I think it then lands at the lowest part of the food chain, where a guy gets the sense of entitlement that he can punch somebody in the face.
Exactly, Simon. I think you're spot on with everything you've said. I've seen the video, Martin. It shows the assistant referee, the lad who's 21 or 22, who's volunteered to be the assistant ref, walking past another man on the touchline. He turns around and he walks right into a sucker punch, and it is some punch, and it lays him out. Martin, stay with us. Many people trying to get in touch with us, because this is a subject which really gets people's go. It gets people commenting. It gets people lifting the phone. They want to come to air with us. And one such individual is Sam, who's a referee who joins us live. Sam, good morning. What's your take on what you're hearing?
Good morning. Yeah, no, so my name's Sam. I've been a referee for the last 12, 13 years down near Devon. I also help teach the referee course for all the new referees. And you boys have really touched a good subject, which just doesn't get enough coverage nowadays. I always encourage any players, especially when me as a referee, I'm trying to do a game. I encourage them to put themselves in my shoes to see how they would see it. And a lot of the times I don't get the response. And a lot of times people will always turn a blind eye. I've got a lot of good referee friends that have had constant abuse throughout the games. And we look at a new referees course, to which we've had over only in the last month or so, where we had 21 new referees. And unfortunately, none of them want to go into adults grassroots football. And then you look at incidents like this and you wonder why.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Sam, do you think Simon's right? The only way to get through this is for people to realise about the implications. The implications will be heavy if you certainly verbally abuse a referee, but physically abuse one as well. They need to get their collars felt, right?
No, absolutely. And Simon, you know, Simon makes a lot of points, and I actually am a big fan of some of the things he says, and he is right. The one thing that I can back, though, is that the FA are very good with referees. They do offer the support, and should an incident like this happen, they are normally heavy to, they do come down on them quite hard. The only thing is that, unfortunately, that doesn't deter people. People will still see it, and they think that they can get away with it. I'd love to see maybe the punishments be a little bit more harsher. I look at things like, well, why can't, if a player is going to strike a referee, why should he be allowed to go and watch football? He should be banned from probably stadiums as well. It's you wouldn't go down the street and shout at somebody for not doing their job, so why would you do it to a referee?
That's a great point, Sam. Great point. Thank you for your comments, mate, and thanks for coming on. Martin, we just heard from Sam there, and we take his points. Here's the thing, though. No doubt, Mr. Martin Cassidy, you'll be joining us again in the not-too-distant future, and we're talking about another similar incident, such as this one in Anglesey at the weekend. Our show, Simon and I are proud of it. It's a very high-profile show with a very big following, and we're proud of that too. And you would think people would get the message, some of them, but they don't, Martin.
No, and you're spot on, and he was spot on with a lot of things he said there. It's just gone on for way too long. But the game changer here is that people like you are pushing it and supporting grassroots referees. And I was on the breakfast show with Ali and Jeff Stelling last week, and I said something that Jeff challenged me on, because I said about the emotional intelligence of players compared to the emotional intelligence of referees, and I should have rated that different really, because intelligence, they took a bit of a point with it, but it's the emotional control. You know, you never see all the pressure that referees are under. You never see them lose control of their emotions, but you see players doing it. And it's this sort of, like Simon said, we're just fair game. We can just do what we want, say what we want to referees. And it's 100% replicated at the grassroots level, which stops referees coming through, which then we have less referees. So therefore the talent goes down. And then one thing I'd really like to say, actually, we're only about a week away from the anniversary of Anthony Taylor getting attacked at an airport in Hungary.
Yes.
What's really changed? That video, I was on with you guys talking about that last night, who's trending on Twitter? Anthony Taylor. No one seems to learn from what goes on. It's just sat there, and we're just fair game, and something just needs to change. But having voices like yourselves really does make a difference, and long may that continue.
Danger. Flammable exchanges ahead. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Mr. Simon Jordan, if we're not talking about you and Talk Sport, we're talking about your Daily Mail column. If we're not talking about your Daily Mail column, we're talking about your Upfront podcast. And the other day, John Terry was a guest on your Upfront podcast. You touched on this. Back in July 2012, John Terry was cleared by Westminster Magistrates Court of racially abusing Anton Ferdinand following an incident between the two during a game between Queen's Park Rangers and Chelsea. I remember it. In September, though, the FA had found Terry guilty of racially abusing Ferdinand, where Terry was subsequently banned for 4 matches and fined £220,000. This was Terry's reflection on the handling of the situation then when he spoke to you.
It was a time that was clearly very difficult for Anton and his family.
Yeah.
Clearly very difficult for myself as well. For me, it was the court of law is the final say. There's no bigger in the UK. So I tried to make contact with Anton that evening after the game. I tried to make contact with Rio and their agent after the game. And I basically got shut down instantly from all of them. So we could have done something that was probably more powerful than what came about in the end. And that's probably my disappointment, because it's in the game, clearly in the stadiums and all of that now, that we need to get out for sure. We could have done something very powerful as a group of players, not only us, but everybody else, I think, at the time. And since then, I've tried to speak to Rio, who doesn't want to talk to me at all. I've seen him on the beach in Dubai and refused to speak to me. And there's not much more I can do. And the outcome was the outcome, and the court of law. And the other one I don't really pay much to attention about, to be honest, the FA one.
But you would refute any observation that you were racist, wouldn't you?
Simon, 100%. I can't believe you even asked the question, to be honest.
Simon, there was a huge reaction to that. Now reacting himself is Anton Ferdinand, who listened to it. He listened to it on the Vibe with Five podcast, and he made his reaction public.
As you know, I've done a documentary for the BBC, which stated all the facts, which he actually declined coming on. I wanted him on there to create positive change. I've seen what he's had to say on Simon Jordan's podcast. So my thing is this. If you really want to make positive change, I'll sit down with you with live cameras rolling so there's nowhere for us to hide. We'll look at the actual footage, unblurred, and we'll start from there. If you don't want to talk about it like that, as far as I'm concerned, the case is closed for me.
So it was Anton, and he's kind of thrown it out there to John Terry. Okay, let's talk. Let's do something publicly with microphones on us both. Let's do it live. I don't know how they do it live, but that's his suggestion. Do you think, I mean, you know John, and I know Anton to a degree as well. Do you think John should take up the challenge with Anton here?
Look, I mean, I'm not going to speak for John Terry and what he will and won't do, and I don't have any particular skin in the game. You know, I like John Terry as a player. I admire him as a leader. And I think there's challenges outside of the game that he's had to contend with, of his own making. I think he has his own view on what he will and won't say and when he will and won't say it. The balance to be had is... It's a tough line to walk along, because I think there's if you say the word context, people will scream that there's no context for a racial epithet. And then you look at it and say, I get the impression, and this is me and what I imagine will happen, is that John Terry will have his say on this subject when it suits John Terry, under the conditions that suit John Terry. John Terry didn't particularly want that question asked of him by me. He didn't even know that question was going to be asked, because I didn't tell him prior to the interview.
Know you were going to bring up this topic?
No, I didn't. And there's a distinct possibility that he might not have done the interview if he knew these questions were going to be asked. He answered the questions. The subject's been brought up. I think he thinks it's a closed issue. It's a closed issue for which he's been sanctioned. He believes, and to some extent so do I, that the highest proof burden is through the legal system and not through FA courts. And the fact that he was acquitted through those courts are his principal position. But I get the impression, and I would imagine if I was in his shoes, the media sort of lid has been lifted. He doesn't do many media stuff. The fact he did one with me tells you that there might be a direction of travel that is going, and you might see John Terry might be slightly more available in the media. And I think you'll find there might be opportunities for John to have precisely his say under his conditions, under the terms that he wishes to advance his view on what happened between himself and Anton. Because really and truly, there's only two people that know what absolutely happened. There might have been a few people that heard certain things and maybe followed the trail of what they were saying to one another during the course of that particular game. And I'm not seeking to be an apologist or a condoner or putting one foot in either camp, right? I'm suggesting that John Terry, I would imagine, might well have his say on this subject matter and won't do it to the tune of Anton Ferdinand, and the way that Anton Ferdinand might want to do it. And I think the reference that John was making at the time was, what a horrible instance for all of us to be involved in. At the time, we could have turned this into a more positive thing. Now what we're doing is we're raking over the coals of something that happened 12 years ago that doesn't really have any relevance anymore.
Yeah.
And that's me opening that can of worms, because if I didn't do that interview with John Terry and ask him that question, everyone would have said to me, you're a snivelling coward.
You didn't ask the question.
You didn't ask the elephant in the room.
It still might have relevance to Anton.
Well, it may well do. I mean, Anton, in the court of public opinion, and of course in the court of football, John Terry has been found guilty by the Football Association of an offence. And I think most people take the view that he has a case to answer. And I'm not interested in context or nuance or John Terry's version of events. And it's up to John if he wants to put that in the public domain. If I'm in his shoes, would I take up Anton Ferdinand's offer? I might have said more previously myself.
Yeah.
If I had an alternate view, I might have been more on the front foot from the outset saying, well, what about this?
Yeah.
And if I did do this, what about that? But that's me.
Yeah. Briefly, Simon, I've done a few interviews in my time, and please don't ask me X or Y, but you feel obliged, you have to ask it, and the atmosphere can change a bit
birth sign was. You know, he knew that there had to be something. He watches the podcast. So I think there's an element of respect, certainly respect. I think he was a fantastic player. I think he's arguably the best defender this country's ever produced in conjunction and aligned with people like Bobby Moore. I think Rio Ferdinand falls into that category as well. And it's a very sad state of affairs that these guys are at odds and circumstances have manifested themselves.
It might well be that it's agreed all round it's good to talk, and we'll see if they do.
The world's most dangerous download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's ArmOdillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.